Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with CJ Albertson.
So I'm just running through different titles and it kind of like motivates me. Cause like you can't have a title like that if you suck. Like if you have a workout, it's like, you know, what do you say? You can't like, so I like go into the workout coming up with all these like, oh, this is a great one. This is a great title. So then I have to smash the workout or else I can't use that one. So that's my motivation is Strava.
On this episode of The Rundown, I got to catch up with an old friend, competitive distance runner, Run Boston tour guide, and director of athletic programs for the Boston Athletics Association, Wayne Levy. Running has always been and continues to be a constant in Wayne's everyday life. From his own pursuit to his involvement with the BAA and helping the homeless literally get back on their feet, he continues to pay it forward. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, Running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, I'd like to update you on the 100K world record attempt that happened earlier last week. The mark to beat was 6 hours, 9 minutes, and 14 seconds. Jim Walmsley, the favorite to take down that time, missed it by only a few seconds, crossing the line just 12 seconds shy of the mark. As tough as it was to fall short of the world record after giving it all he had, Jim still walked away with the new 100K American record that day. No doubt he'll get back to work and pull off this incredible feat sometime in the near future. In case you were wondering, the Boston Athletics Association has just announced that the 125th Boston Marathon is scheduled for October 11th, later on this year. In light of the global pandemic, they have even allowed runners to use qualifying times dating back to 2018. Stay tuned for all information concerning registration for this historic world major. Who knows, maybe we'll see each other on the start line. Make sure to check the show notes for links to information about these upcoming events, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. As you may or may not know, my first Boston was in 2017. It was an event that I didn't foresee actually ever being able to do, but lo and behold, it happened. And it was actually a special year because I got invited by Lululemon, and there was runners from all over North America actually that got invited, and we were staying at the same hotel. And they hosted us to an amazing event, and one of the key people there to host us was my next guest. He's living in Boston. He's part of the Boston Athletics Association. He's an accomplished runner himself. And in his spare time, he does Boston tours as well. So it was quite fitting that he was there to host us and show us around Boston and the course. I'd like to welcome to the show, Wayne Levy.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to join you and looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, it was actually like such an amazing weekend. It's fun to have you on, and it was great to meet you that weekend as well. It was the energy was incredible. Like, I mean, just the Boston Marathon itself for anyone's first time is a pretty cool event. But then the way we were hosted and everything, we really felt like we were special. What was it like for you to be part of something like that?
Well, Boston is always special every year that I have had the opportunity to participate, whether as a runner or as a spectator. It's just a great time to be in the city. And obviously with its history, whether it's your first Boston or your 10th or your 20th, it's just an amazing experience. And I get asked all the time by people who are visiting the city or have interest in running Boston, what makes Boston or the Boston Marathon so special? And there are several things that contribute and make it so unique and special. And I'm sure you had a chance to experience that your first Boston in 2017. So the crowd support that you get is unparalleled. I've done other marathons, and from start to finish, there is just not a quiet section of the course. It's deafening, and you really can thrive on that. Sometimes there are parts of the course that's too loud, and you got to make sure you stay within yourself. The challenging course, one of the most challenging courses, where the first 16 miles you're running downhill, and then from 16 to 20, you have up the Newton Hills, and then the last 10K is also downhill. So you need to be strategic in terms of how you prepare for the course and how you execute on race day. So that adds to the aurora. The weather, you know, Boston in its history have had temperatures over 100 degrees, and they've had temperatures below freezing and rain and snow. So you have so many different things that just all adds to the excitement, and it's part of what make Boston so unique.
I think the rain and the snow one is the one I'm... No, the snow is what I'm missing. I got the rain, I got the heat, and now I just need one with snow and I'll be complete.
Well, you got the heat, but you didn't get the real heat. I had the opportunity to run... I forgot what year it was. It was several years before 2013, maybe two or three years before, and we call that the heat wave. Now, it wasn't over 100, but it was 96 degrees at the start. And man, I love the heat, but Justin, I got to tell you, that was quite an experience and quite a challenge.
I can imagine. I don't fare well in the heat at all, so I don't wish for more races like that, that's for sure. What do you feel is, like, runners... what's the mistake that runners make coming into Boston when they haven't experienced that course?
Well, I think first you need to prepare for Boston differently than how you prepare for other marathons. You have to incorporate downhill running in your training. So if you make that mistake, it's going to be a tall order before the gun even goes off. So you really need to just kind of have some knowledge of the course and prepare accordingly. So that's one. You can be in great marathon shape, Justin, and get here, and even running a smart race, you get to mile 16 and you don't understand why you're not tired, but your quads are just shot. And that's just because of the downhill the first 16 miles. So that's one in terms of how you prepare for it. And then race execution is also important. Some people make the mistake, some runners make the mistake of thinking, oh, it's downhill, let me go out fast, take advantage of the downhills and put some time and money in the bank. And that's not the smartest way to approach it, because you're going to pay for it later on. So I think it's preparation and then also race execution that you just need to be smart about how you prepare and how you approach your race on race day. And then you also have to factor in the weather, because in Boston in April, there aren't leaves on the trees. So even a mild day in the 50s or 60s, if it's sunny, you need to be aware that you're just going to bake for 2, 3, 4 five, however long you're going to be out there. So those three things, you just need to be smart about your approach to the experience.
I also find, like, the beginning, like, even before you get to the starting line is also part of the strategy too, right? Like taking the bus out there and then having to wait a little bit. I know that, I went from my first one and, like, took a later bus so I wouldn't have to wait as long, you know, which might not be advised, but it kind of worked out in year 2 and 3 for myself personally. And in the year where we called it the monsoon, the being out there for less time actually was beneficial, because we weren't fighting the cold as much, you know.
Yeah, the BA, they do a wonderful job in terms of race execution and all the planning that goes into, you know, busing 30,000 plus people from Boston to the start in Hopkinton. For those who may not be familiar with Boston, it's a point-to-point course that starts at 10 o'clock, and there are four waves. So logistically, that presents some challenge because you have to bus 30,000 people out to the start, and you have to do it in waves. So that's kind of the approach. And, you know, depending on when you are scheduled to go off, there are four waves. You do have to be smart about staying off your feet, what you consume from food and liquids prior to your start, and just try to conserve your energy until the gun goes off. Otherwise, it's a long day.
For sure. And you know, as challenging as the weather is, though, like, it brings some exciting results, right? And you see it in the, like, with the elite field, too. Like, that year, Des Linden won and Yuki won. So, like, some names that maybe we didn't expect, but it makes them for some interesting racing in terms of, like, how did these pros strategize? Like, you know, the best of the best, too. So that's kind of always fun to watch as well.
Yeah, 2018.
What's your most memorable? Yeah.
Well, I would say 2014. So I don't remember what number that was. I had a streak going prior to dropping out in 2018, and that would have been my ninth. So 2014 was definitely my most memorable. After the horrific events that occurred in 2013, just to see how many people came out to support the runners on 2014, all the runners that participated and wanted to do Boston that year to kind of prove Boston strong and to stand and run in solidarity. And it was an emotional race, but certainly one that is memorable. And I say that because we came together as a city, we came together as a community, we came together as a world, and essentially just said that, you know, we are Boston strong, we are resilient, and it was an amazing and incredible experience. So I would say that that's probably my most memorable Boston.
Yeah, I can imagine. And actually, you know, knowing that that happened, the bombings happened and stuff, even for myself in 2017, like, the residual is still there a little bit, you know, definitely not as, let's say, strong as it would have been in 2014. But, like, for myself, visiting the course and, like, you know, you see, you know, there's a, you know, where it occurred, and you run past it when you're coming down the finish, it overwhelms you with a sense of emotion, like, for myself personally. And you do feel like the strength of the city and the unity that it brought out and everybody. And it couldn't help but get chills, like, coming down that's the final stretch. Definitely it's a special place for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I am reluctant or hesitant to go back to 2013. Because it was such a dark time and a really dark place, but it's a part of our history. It happened, and I think it's okay to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Were you racing that year, Wayne?
I was. Yeah, I was there. Fortunately for me, I'm fast enough to have made it in before things started to go south. But yeah, I ran it that year. I think I ran 2:37, if I had to guess, just doing it off of memory. But yeah, was here for the whole thing.
Yeah, that's I can't imagine the impact. Like, must have shook the city and the runners and all that. And it's just watching it on TV was bad enough, you know. Let alone being on the course, and, you know, timing is. Timing of it and everything like that. So, but like you say, then, you know, you proves the resilience of the people in the city, and it came back strong, even stronger than before. What was it like being in the city this year with everything happening with COVID and everything? Because, you know, that's such a huge part of what Boston does. It's such a huge event for the city, and to not have it this year, what did it look like? And then what did it look like in terms of, you know, we all got into these, you know, I know personally, I got into some virtual stuff, and I know Boston through the virtual marathon, which they postponed till later in the year. But yeah, what was that all like?
So, you know, it's hard to say what it looked like in April because I wasn't there. So our offices are near, about a block away from the finish line. And around mid-March, we had made the decision to have our staff work remotely. And as a result of that, we've actually been working remote since that time. And I was not in the city around the time that the marathon would usually occur on Patriots Day, that third Monday in April. So I don't know. You know, it was certainly a weird time to be in Boston and to be in Massachusetts and not be in Boston and not have the Boston Marathon. But when you step back and look at all that was happening in the world, running was sort of the last thing on our minds. We were in the midst of a pandemic and people were dying. And to me, that takes precedent over, you know, running as much as I love it and it's our passion. So I think that's kind of been the focus, more so than, you know, the marathon and not having the marathon. It's just, you know, dealing with the pandemic and seeing the numbers of people, new infections and people that were dying on a daily basis. Hard pill to swallow. And it still is.
Yeah. Was it tough for you personally? Like, how'd you find that? Like working from home and, you know, with restrictions and all that stuff. How have you been finding it on a personal level?
At the start, it took some adjusting, you know, being home and not being in the office with your colleagues and still trying to be effective in your role and your position. It took a little bit of getting used to. You know, we're a small staff and typically if you need something, you will step away from your desk and you go over and you ask someone or you have a conversation. Now you have to make an appointment and it's on Zoom and we don't have our staff meeting. So it definitely took some getting used to, but I will say now we've pivoted and we've adjusted and now we're functioning very effectively, even though we're all working remotely. So to answer the question, took a little bit of getting used to, but I think we have adapted and we have adjusted and we've proven that we can still be effective, although we're not in the same space. And it's not just, that's not just unique to the BAA. I mean, I think the world is experiencing the same thing and adapting and just kind of adjusting to how different things are.
Well, so what's your role at the BAA now?
I am the director of athletic programs. And the best way I can describe what I do is think of an athletic director at a university or at a college. So anything that has to do with athletics or athletic performance falls under my umbrella. We obviously, for the Boston Marathon, as well as our other races, what we call the distance medley events, which are the BAA 5K, the BAA 10K, and the BAA half marathon, we do have an invitational mile as well. So for those five races, I handle elite athlete recruitment. So that's dealing with athletes and obviously we work very closely with John Hancock, our principal sponsor. But we have to deal with athletes and agents and coaches to build a field and try to have competitive races within the mass participatory race as well. So that's on the external side. And internally, we have a running club that consists of about 200 athletes, and we have high-performance athletes who are professionals, and they're paid to represent the BAA and promote our brand. And we also have racing team members and running club members. So in a nutshell, those are some of the things that falls under my umbrella.
Awesome. Yeah, I actually signed up for the 5K. I was going to take a break in 2020 and not run the marathon. And I was like, but how can I still be involved? So I signed up for the 5K.
In theory, you can do both. The 5K is typical on Saturday and the marathon is on Monday. So in theory, come back and do both.
Yeah, true. I know, but I really wanted to take a break from the marathon itself. So, but neither happened. So we're neither here nor there. What was the virtual aspect like? Like, I know that you pushed the Boston Marathon till later in the year, and ended up going virtual. Was that a cool experience for you? And do you think it kind of kept people connected to the race, even though they didn't actually go on physically?
You know, it was interesting. If you had asked me this question, you know, a year ago, last January, February, March, and say the Boston Marathon is going to be virtual and we're going to have 18,000 plus people register, I would have said, no way. You know, but almost a year later, what we have found is that people are still running and they're looking for an opportunity to compete, although albeit remotely and not together. We were surprised and really impressed with the response from the running community who wanted to still participate in the Boston Marathon virtually. And as you know, there's nothing virtual about running. You still have to go out and run 26.2 miles.
Yeah. The challenge is finding a hill that simulates Newton. That's the real struggle.
I have to tell you, you know, part of it, and I was fortunate to participate and did a virtual marathon. What's kind of unique about that, and what's attractive, is you get to be your own race director. So you get to pick whichever day you want to do it. So you're not locked into a specific date or time, because we had a window that folks could go out and compete their marathon. So you get to pick your own day. You get to pick your own time of day. You get to pick your own course. And in doing so, why would you want to throw in or simulate a heartbreak unless you're a glutton for punishment? You know, why would you want to do that when there's no need? So, it was interesting to kind of see how the world responded and what people were doing and where they were doing their marathons. So I personally picked a flat 2.6 mile loop around the Charles River and basically just did that 10 times and had an amazing experience. So it was interesting. It really was.
Yeah. And this conversation actually comes off of the news that Boston actually just announced for this year. That's got to be exciting for a lot of runners, and like I'm sure for yourself as well, to actually have something to look forward to. Are you optimistic about this year? I've kind of written off 2021 already and just said I'm going to plan for racing in 2022, but I know probably not everyone wants to hear that.
Well, I should confess that I am always optimistic. I am the eternal optimist. So, but I think, you know, you kind of have to, because if you're not optimistic, then what are you, right? What's the opposite? And what does that look like? So I am optimistic. I think, you know, the world is kind of, we're not out of the woods yet, but we can see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. We don't know how long the tunnel is, but there's definitely a light that we can see. So we're hopeful, and obviously you saw the release, and we were very cautious in how we are sharing the news. You know, saying basically if we're allowed, and we would like to, but certainly no guarantees. But nonetheless, we're keeping our fingers and toes crossed and hope that overall would be a little different than it is today, 9 months from now, and we'll be able to have a live Boston Marathon.
For sure. Does anything, I mean, I hope so too for running. If Boston Marathon happens, then we're at a place where we're kind of back to normal. And I trust me, there's nothing more I want. There's nothing I want more than for that to happen, right? So, but yeah, I'm just hopeful that it does happen and we can finally get there. Does it change the way you plan for the 125th anniversary year of the race?
Absolutely. I mean, my sense is, and again, we have a race director and we have an operations department, so I don't want to speak on their behalf. We also have a communications department, but my sense is it's going to be a while before the Boston Marathon looks and feels like the last Boston Marathon in 2019. It's just going to be different. It's going to be completely different. And I don't know how, but I just can't envision it being the way it was, 2 years ago, 2019.
So I'd like to continue and learn more about you and where you're from and, you know, your upbringing. Were you athletic as a kid and how did running come into play?
Sure. And I'll kind of walk you through it and feel free to interrupt. So as you may or may not know, or I don't know if you've detected an accent, I am originally from Jamaica. So the accent that you are hearing, is my Jamaican accent and not my Boston accent. born and raised there, spent the first 12 years of my life in Jamaica. And didn't know anything about running, obviously, as a kid, just wasn't on my radar. Interestingly enough, I am told now that as a kid, I would always run everywhere. If I was asked to go to the store, I wouldn't walk. I would just take off and start running. And my parents would say, "Stop, you don't have to run, you could walk." came over to the U.S., when I was 12 and spent some time in New Haven, Connecticut. And there, in seventh and eighth grade, played basketball and soccer, still hadn't been introduced to running. And it was right around eighth grade. In basketball, we would have to do laps around the basketball court. And my basketball coach at the time noticed that I would be running and running and just kind of lapping the other players and just didn't seem to be getting tired. So he said, when you go to high school, when you go to ninth grade, you may want to consider giving running a try. Just try it out. You never know. So I took his advice, and my freshman year in high school, went and introduced myself to the coach and said, I would like to try. I think it was cross country in the fall. And I forgot what the exact distance was. We had to run, may have been like 4 or 5 miles. And I got through it pretty easily my first day. And she said, interestingly enough, you seem to do okay with the distance. Let's say you're a distance runner. And just started enjoying it and started having some success and haven't looked back. So that was my freshman year in high school, which is going way back. And that's kind of how I got introduced to the sport.
What brought you guys over to the States?
So I am one of six siblings. I have five sisters, and one of my sisters, Marjorie, she and I are pretty close. My mother was here and she brought Marjorie and myself, Marjorie and I, over to the U.S. So I came here to be reacquainted with her, my mother, who was in New Haven at the time when we came over.
That's great. So the running, like, did you notice any, what was the thing that you connected with running early on? Like, did you, like, you were good at it? You had a natural ability, it seems like. Was there something in particular that you connected with?
You know, you never know how good you are, especially when you're just starting with a sport. But I was having some success as a freshman. I was doing well on my team. And then as we go on to the district or the conference meet and in the state. So I started having some initial success. But for me, I just love doing it. Whether it was running on my own or at practice, I was really enjoying it every day and every minute of it. And interestingly enough, I mean, fast forward several decades later, I'm still enjoying it, and still, it's a part of my life. It's a passion, and I just love doing it. I can't imagine not doing it. And I just want to say, you know, sometimes we take for granted how fortunate we are to have our health, to be able to do it every day. You know, I can just put my running stuff on and go out and run 10 miles and do it pretty easily. So just having your health to be able to do that and to be in a position where you can do it. Sometimes we take it for granted. And you know, with all that's happened in the last year, I'm just starting to realize how truly blessed and fortunate I am to be in a position to do that.
Mm. Yeah, I reflect on that often too, Wayne. Honestly, it's not everybody can. And, you know, to be able to go out for a run almost daily is like a gift. You know, really, it's to have our 2 feet to move on. And
right.
Yeah, I can't take those things for granted. Has the pandemic brought new meaning to your running?
But, well, even, you know, you just said to have 2 feet, but even something as simple, and this may be hard for a lot of people to relate to, but just being able to afford running shoes. You know, people in this country and in other parts of the world where they're not in a position to do that. And of course, they can run barefoot. But so it's something we often lose sight of and take for granted. But every now and then, I have that moment where I really just say, I'm really fortunate and really blessed. I'm sorry, what was your last question?
Oh, I said, like, has the pandemic given new meaning to your running?
It has. You know, it's been interesting running during a pandemic because I like one of the things that I enjoy about running is running with other people, and I've been selective about who I run with and number of people for obvious reasons. I've also been strategic about when and where I run because in Massachusetts and parts of the state, there are mandates that you are required to wear a mask, particularly if you go on a bike path or certain parks, and certain cities and towns have, it's an executive order and there's a citation if you don't comply. So that's a game changer. You know, I have not mastered the art or the sport of running with a face mask or a covering. So I typically try to select routes where there's not a lot of traffic. And I do run, wear a mask, and then just obviously pull it up when I'm approaching someone. But it's just been, it's different. And you know, it's been how many months? 9-10 months, and just still adapting to it. Certainly different. So to answer your question, there are some challenges, you know, running in a pandemic, but we still love to run, so we figure out how to navigate around those challenges and continue to put our shoes on and get out the door.
For sure. I know my challenge now is my beard. Like if I pull up my buff on my face, my beard freezes to it. So it takes like another 30 minutes when I come in the door to get it off.
Yeah.
Or else I'm pulling out hair. So it's my challenge.
I don't have a beard, but you know, I ran earlier and in Boston today, it's particularly cold. It was the temperature, what time? It was 8 or 9 degrees. And then this is Fahrenheit. And then the wind chill was 4 below 0. So the challenge for me is I wear mittens and sometimes double mittens, and it's just hard to pull up the buff and down. So that's why I'm selective about the routes that I run and when I run to try and minimize the number of people And it's probably smart from a safety standpoint anyway, is just to, you know, not be running where there's a lot of traffic, foot traffic.
For sure. What were some early challenges you faced in your running career, and how did you adapt to change them moving forward?
So, you know, I've been blessed, again, I keep using that term, where I have not had a lot of injuries throughout my running career. I run often and I run consistently and I run a lot. So, you know, once upon a time people would call me the king of the daily dimes, because I would do, my staple was to do 10 miles a day. And I did it for most days, regardless of the weather or the time a day and whether I was training or not. So to answer the question, you know, I don't know if there have been a lot of challenges, Justin. I know that sounds like a funny answer or response, but I've been healthy. I've stayed competitive. I've continued to compete, and obviously I've had minor setbacks. But for the most part, there really hasn't been a lot of them. You know, I continue to compete as an age grouper, and obviously my expectations have been managed accordingly. I forget about the workouts that I used to do and my PRs, and just kind of, you know, accept that things are different now. But yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of setbacks that I've had over the years. You know, running in the cold continues to be a challenge. I've lived in Boston for decades and I still don't enjoy it. And I haven't gotten used to that and much prefer running. I will choose 90 degrees and Fahrenheit again, humid over 20 or 10 degrees any day of the week. Love running in the heat and it doesn't bother me.
Yeah. I wish I could say the same. I'm a cold weather runner. I think for the most part, I usually like those October races, which is actually when I heard that Boston was going to be ran at, or scheduled for October, I got quite excited. That's for me, a perfect time of year to do it.
Oh, you got to come. Would love to have you back. You got to come and do it.
I'm supposed to do Berlin in September, so the October race might be a challenge.
How many miles apart is Berlin and Boston? I should know this. What's the date?
I think it's 2 weeks. Berlin is like the 26th, I think, something like that, of September.
Yeah. So
And then Boston's what, the 11th?
Yeah, that is correct. So probably 3 weeks.
Yeah, something like that. So not impossible, certainly, but hey, maybe I'll – they haven't opened registration, have they?
No, we have not.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't want to get back into the Boston stuff, but like since we're there, do you know how they're selecting for that, or is it like a clean slate? I know the qualifying times will be good from a certain point moving forward, but I was just curious.
So, you know, a lot of this is for now, we have essentially announced the date. A lot of additional information and decisions are forthcoming, and we don't want to do that prematurely. So in terms of when registration is going to open, that has not been announced. And we're working very closely with cities and state officials and health officials to determine when is the best time to do that. And then obviously the next logical question is, if registration is opening, what is the field size? That has not been determined. And in terms of the window, I believe that's on our website and that has been shared. So essentially, similar to what we did for 2020, we're going back to 2018 to allow folks to use their qualifying time from September of 2018. Because they're really, again, if you think about it, from September of 2018 to February, maybe, of 2020. That's essentially the window. There haven't been a ton of marathons once things started to shut down in, you know, February, March. There was, I know the Olympic trials was on the 29th, the leap year, and then there was a marathon in Atlanta the following day. And I don't know of too many other marathons. I'm sure there have been, but there have been. So in fairness to the runners, we really have to allow them to use times that occurred during that window from 2018 to 2020.
Right. Which is crazy, right? Like, because if that's their qualifying time, it's like 3 years later. It's, I know it's like the window you have to open for them,
that,
but it's like...
That is the conundrum that we have found ourselves in because, you know, people have gotten older. So, you know, now they age up. And so there's a lot of things that we still have to work through. But the bottom line is all these decisions are going to be made with the mindset of keeping everyone safe and also doing what we believe is fair. So safety is number one, and all of our decisions, we will try to be as fair as possible. Now, even in doing so, there's always going to be, whether it's one individual or 10 individuals, you know, that's affected. But we are always, you know, trying to do what we believe is fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're always going to get those people for sure. But like knowing the, you know, for as long as Boston's put on the race, like for as many years as they put it on, the organization is exceptional, A1. They're going to make the right choice no matter what. So I have no doubts with that for sure. Do you remember, I'll go back to you now as a growing runner. Who was it that recognized potential in you, you know, cause you've raced competitively for a long time. You started doing it for fun and then you started performing well, or was it a coach that said like, hey, I really think you could be good at this, or was that an internal thing?
Well, I've had a handful of coaches over my career, and my first one was my high school coach, obviously. And I think she recognized, Diane Wright, she recognized the potential and worked with me. And I later went on to be state champ in Connecticut. I went to high school in New Haven. So it started there. I think she recognized the potential, and then I was recruited to attend college at UMass Amherst. Randy Thomas, you know, who was a very accomplished runner in his right, and Coach Ken O'Brien, I was recruited to go to UMass. So they obviously saw the potential in me to recruited me to go to UMass. And then post-collegiately, I joined the BAA and had two or three coaches. So they also recognize the potential there as well. So I think, you know, coaches, but I also have to give credit to my teammates and friends and family who have been supportive throughout my career.
Hmm. What's the best piece of running advice you ever got?
That's a great question. You know, I'm always giving advice, but I never pause to think advice that I have gotten. Probably as it relates to the boss. Well, I learned a lot. I have to say, I learned a lot from Randy Thomas. Randy was my coach at UMass Amherst in college, the 4 years that I was there. And I learned a lot from Randy. So he would always share stories because he, you know, from things that he experienced when he was a runner. But I think what I learned, one of the best advice that I got was, you know, Randy would explain the importance of pacing. And he would challenge us and say, if you were to take a look at all the world records that were set from 800 meters all the way to the marathon distance. And just take a closer look at those on the men's side and on the women's side. And by and large, a very high percentage, if not all, they were set with the athletes either running pace or a negative split. So what that shows and what that proves is that the most efficient way to compete, if you want to maximize your performance, you need to run the same pace or start off slower and finish stronger. Very few, if any, of those athletes went out fast and hung on and went on to set the world record. It just doesn't happen that way. So that was good advice, because it just, you know, I remember that. And when it's time to compete, I always remind myself the importance of pacing and just being aware of what your current fitness is and how you're going to approach the race from a pacing standpoint. So that was good advice. I've also gotten great advice about Boston, because Boston is such a unique course and challenge in terms of how you approach it. But I would say, probably thinking about it now, the advice that I got from Randy about the importance of pacing.
Did you always remain a distance runner from the onset, or did you play around with shorter stuff too?
I've had most success with the longer stuff. So in Connecticut, we were fortunate that we had the 5,000 meters. Most states only go up to 2 miles or 3,000 meters. But in Connecticut, we did have the 5K, and that's what I ran. So, you know, for me, whatever the longest distance was, that's what I wanted to do. And then in college, the longest distance was the 10,000 meters, and I did that on the track. That was probably my best event, although I had some success in the 5,000 meters as well. So the trend has always been the longer the distance, the more success and the better I have been. Now, I will confess that the longest distance I've raced is a marathon. I have not attempted to do anything longer than that. So... just the concept of racing, you know, 36 or 50 miles or 100 miles, it's not appealing. I love running, but it's not appealing or attractive to me at all.
I'm glad we're on the same page, because, I mean, okay, listen, I've done like a 75K, I think is the most I did for a charity thing, and 65 in a race, but these like 100-mile guys, like, I have no desire to even attempt anything close to that. I'm kind of with you there. It's just too much. It's like the marathon is hard enough.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you have the conversations with an ultra, someone who have done them and had success, and it's funny how they try to convince you, and they say, well, yeah, it's not like you're not racing. It's not the same as a marathon. You're not going all out. It's more about pacing and nutrition. And they try to sell it to you. And I'm like, I am all set. Thank you, but no, thank you. 26.2 is plenty for me. And how do you train for a 100-mile race, all right? So anyways, I'm all set. Thank you.
With a family and stuff like that too, which a lot of people have, it's definitely a challenge. Do you find, I know you have a family of 3 boys and a wife, do you find it challenging to train to compete with a family, or have you kind of...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Through experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you are single, there are challenges that comes with training and competing. And then if you have a partner, there are new challenges that now exist once someone else is in the equation, because your decisions are not just based on doing something for yourself, right? You have to consider your time and how it impacts your partner. And then you bring a kids or a child into the equation. And then now, so the short answer to your question is absolutely, certainly more challenging with a partner, with one child, with two, with three, and so on and so forth. But you you figure it out and you adapt. You know, there are 24 hours in a day and you just figure out when is going to be the best time for you to run. It may not always be at the same time or when you used to run before you have a family and before you had a family, but you figure it out. But certainly, definitely challenging, more challenging, I should say.
You have to have a supportive partner too. Is she also in through athletics, and does she share the same passion as you, or does she not?
So my wife, Dani, is not a runner, but extremely supportive. And she knows that it's important to me and it's been an important part of my life. So she encourages me as long as we've been married. I don't think she's ever asked me to take a day off because she knows that it's important to me. It's a part of me, and she accepts it and supports me. And that's probably why we're still together. Right. And maybe it's helpful that she's not a runner also. You know, I don't know. I think there would be advantages because you get to run together, but maybe it's nice to have that balance of someone who's not a runner in your relationship.
For sure. Are you always training to compete? Like, have you always been a competitive guy and training for competitions, or?
I think
the line between fun and competition, I think it's possible to have a balance there. So, because I try and do that myself, but I was just curious for you.
I must confess, I am competitive. my nature is very competitive, sometimes to a fault. And I'll share a story with you. You know, we will be with friends or family, and sometimes we'll be playing board games, and Dani, my wife, just sometimes like to play for fun, but not me. If there's a contest and there's going to be a winner and a loser, I won't be on the winning side. So very competitive, and how that trend, I don't know if that's from running or just my nature, and then it spills over into my running, but certainly, you know, I've been a competitive runner for my entire running career, and it's having that carrot, having that race motivates me. And that's not the only reason why I run, but certainly I like it. I like having something that I'm striving towards or shooting towards because it keeps you honest. It keeps you on track, and it also keeps you accountable. Right. If you know you're preparing for something, you're going to be more committed to doing that. So I've always competed, whether it's in high school, college, post-collegiate, now as, you know, an old man, as an age grouper. But I enjoy it. I love competing. But I also love running. So even when I'm not competing, I'm still enjoying it.
For sure. I know part of your bio that you sent me is like you ran, you've ran over 100,000 miles. So how is the running and training changed for you over the years? You know, when you do something for so long, I mean, I commend you for it, and I want to be that way too, right? I want to live healthy and happy, and I want to continue running for as long as I can. But how does it change for you? Do you have to do more strength work, or are you changing much? Are you kind of doing the same thing? I'm really curious about that.
You know, I can lie and say that things differently now, but I'm not going to do that. There are things that I should be doing differently, but I'm going to be honest. You know, as you get older, you just need to be smarter in your approach. So things that I used to do when I was younger, I know that I can't get away with now. So I'm just more smarter about my recovery, my pace, my approach to workouts, how I allow my body to warm up during runs. So you have to be smarter in your approach, and your expectations are different. But in terms of things that I should be doing, like stretching and, you know, getting massages and lifting weights, and I probably should be doing that, but I haven't. And I continue to be fortunate and not have any injuries. So I kind of feel like if it's not broken, why try to fix it, right? So, but I think just being smarter about, for an example, when I run with a lot of the teammates that I run with and some of my colleagues from work are younger than me. And I always tell them about this thing that I instituted called the Levy Mile. And the Levy Mile is I ask them not to do our first mile any faster than 8 minutes. So, and I just take that mile. I just like to allow the body to warm up. And then after that mile, then I'm ready to go. I'll run as fast as you want, but just give me that first mile. So that is just an approach to really being smart about, you know, allowing your body to warm up. And I think that's just something I've learned over time. I don't need to go out and start hammering, you know, right out the door. I can do that in the middle or at the end of a run after I've had a chance to allow my body to warm up. So it just, the approach, it just, you have to be smarter about your approach as you get older.
Looking back now, what's something you did that you'd never do in running, I should say?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, where do you, as it relates to running, I love racing and I used to race a lot. I remember one particular weekend I drove, God, it must've been like 6 hours to upstate New York. And I ran a race, on Saturday. And then, I can't remember if I must've turned around and drove back another 6 hours to Boston and got up the next day and ran another race in that morning. And looking back, that probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. I mean, I'm surprised I didn't hurt myself. So you make mistakes like that and you get away with them when you're younger. Certainly would never do that now. But that's probably, that is an example of something that, looking back, it wasn't very smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's some advice, like, because clearly, like, someone listening might not be able to pull off what you can, like, you're clearly gifted for that. You know, people might get hurt or trying this, like, similar to techniques. So what kind of advice do you give to beginner runners when they're first starting out?
So I think, you know, when I take a step back and I look at sort of myself and my journey and what brought me to the sport, and each person, each runner's path or introduction to the sport is different. Yours is different than mine, and I'm sure some of the guests that you've had on, you know, their path to running or introduction is so different. So each person's journey or introduction is going to be different. And I think, you know, for someone who's new to the sport, they have to really know why or what brought them to the sport. And people come to the sport for different reasons. People stumble across the sport. They do it out of a challenge. They do it out of a dare. They do it to raise money for a charity. They do it to run with a friend. They do it for other sport. I mean, there's so many different reasons why people are introduced to the sport of running itself. So, but if someone is just starting, my advice is to just be smart about how you are approaching your runs initially, and let me expand on that. So most people that are new to the sport, the mistake that they make is they do one of two things. They either start off by going too far, or they start off by going too fast. And some people go too far too fast. And if you are new to the sport, what you want to do is, and this is how I break it down, very simple, but it makes a lot of sense. You need to figure out what your threshold is when you are starting. So if your threshold is you can just run around one city block and that's all you can do, do that and do it at a pace that is comfortable where you can come back and do it again the next day without being sore. And if you can do that, and if you can do that consistently enough, the body will adapt, and that block that you ran around whether it's a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, at some point the body will adapt and it will become easier if you do it consistently and if you do it at a pace that is comfortable. And then now your threshold has increased and you can do two blocks. And same approach, right? You want to make sure that you do it at a pace that's comfortable enough where there is no residual soreness, because that's what happened. People, they do too much. They do too much too fast, or they go too fast, and then they get sore, they get hurt, and they get discouraged, and they're turned off and they stop running. So you need to be, you got to look at yourself before you go for your run and just be, manage your own expectations in terms of what's like for you. And if you do that, I think you will have some initial success, but more importantly, you will enjoy it and you will just be longer in the sport. And again, over time, you started with a block and then you're doing a mile or a kilometer, and then you're doing 3 miles and 5 miles, and you have your first race and you're enjoying it and you're doing it with friends. And then, you know, and it doesn't have to be the marathon. For a lot of beginners, their marathon may be something as simple as a 5K or a 10K. It doesn't have to, the marathon is not for everyone. So that's kind of a long-winded response to the question, but I think you just need to focus on yourself, manage your expectations accordingly, and don't get so caught up in doing what other people are doing in terms of their distance and their pace. And I think if you can do that, you will enjoy it and you will have longevity in the sport.
I love that. And thank you for expanding on it. I appreciate that, because I totally agree. And I love what you said about like do a block. Like that's so relatable. I think so many times we put pressure and, you know, it's like, seems like the minimum's like a 5K, because that's like a race distance that people hear all the time, you know, and there's a lot of, because, you know, there's a lot of pressure on kilometers and distance, but like most recently I've just switched coaching and he does everything on time, which is foreign to me, but some days it's one distance and some days it's another distance, but it's the same amount of time on my feet. It's just how I feel, you know? So it's,
Justin, a 5K is a, you know, if you would walk a 5K and just see how far it is, or drive a 5K, I mean, it's a long ways.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's like, it's a trap that I think a lot of beginners make. And I'm happy you said it, because, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, right? Yeah, I mean, a lot of your audience are probably runners, but maybe they aren't. And I get, running is not for everyone. But I will say that if you approach it the right way, you will know if it's for you or not. And if it is for you, and there are some benefits, there are a lot of benefits, then it's a thing of beauty once you get there and you can enjoy it. It doesn't, you know, back in the day, running was used as punishment, right? If you practice, you were told to go do a lap. Right around the court of the field as a form of punishment. But I think, you know, we have evolved and we realize that running is something that has a lot of, there are so many benefits. So that's why it continues to grow as a sport and more people are doing it.
I'm sure in your experience, you could probably think of a handful of people that didn't think they would like it, and now all of a sudden they're
more than a handful. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting that you say that, Justin, because when after they're running and they consider themselves a runner and they go back and they said, I had no idea. They never thought that they didn't envision themselves doing that. And I think if you hear that story, if you're new to the sport or thinking of trying it, when you listen to those individuals, you just have to give yourself a chance and give it a chance. And it's really fascinating to hear people who are enjoying it talk about their experience when they first started.
Do you often run solo, or, you know, when did you jump into the run community?
So, you know, when I moved to Boston after graduating from college, I wanted to continue to compete. So I joined a running club and then eventually found my way to the BAA. So I've been on their running club for, I don't even know, 22, 24, I lost count, years. But I joined because I love running with other people. I mean, there are days when I enjoy running by myself and I just like that alone time. But I truly enjoy, you know, running with someone else or other people. I do find enjoyment in that. Just you get to learn about someone, you get to know them. And it's just something that's nice about running with someone or running with a group. And that's why I joined a team in a club. And I still enjoy that.
Mm. Yeah. I love it. I love that. And I miss it too, tremendously, leading a small group here in Montreal. And every Monday we'd go out, or joining another group. There's, you know, there's a run group for every night of the week over here. And yeah, I do miss that, the connection to community for sure.
And most runners, they'll talk about that camaraderie that you get from running with other people. I mean, there are those individuals who prefer to run by themselves at time, but by and large, most runners, they do enjoy running with other runners and other people.
Mm. And if they don't know it, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense, but I think it's the combination of when you're a beginner and you want to get into it. Some people don't want to join a club right away because of the level.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're like, I'm not going to be able to keep up. How far can I, you know? So I think that's what clubs and that's what we as runners have to do. We really have to open our arms and, you know, welcome these runners that are potential runners that are on the fence or that are new, and just let them know that, come, you know, you don't have to run the same distance and the same pace. Just come and run a portion of it with us and give it a try. We have to welcome these folks into, you know, the running space. I think we owe that to the sport, and we owe that to folks that are on the fence about trying or giving it a try.
For sure. Have you noticed the culture change in Boston over the years?
So Boston is a college town. So, you know, during the summer, this is pre-COVID, our city looks different in the summer compared to during the school year because of all the students that are here. But we have a lot of things going for us. We have the Charles River. So Boston is a running town. It's a running community. And then with the success of the BAA and the Boston Marathon and the other races, and there are other local races, this is a running town. There are several, quite a few competitive running clubs that are also here in Boston and Massachusetts and New England. So it's definitely a running town. You walk down the street, you drive, you will see a lot of people running. It's a running town for sure.
Running seems to be such a huge part of your life. Was that always the plan?
No, you know, I think there's a part of the story, and I don't know how much time we have, that I didn't share. Running has saved my life. So I think that's part of the reason why I'm so passionate about it. And I don't know if you know this, you know, my mother passed away when I was 16 years old, and I had been running for 4 years. And I was here with my sister that I mentioned earlier in the conversation, my older sister. And it continues to be the toughest thing I've ever had to deal with, you know, being at that age and losing your mother. So it was a tough thing to deal with, and I didn't have a ton of family here. And being in high school in New Haven, started hanging with, and you can't see me because this is a podcast. I just quotation some friends, quote unquote friends. And, you know, not the crowd that I should have been hanging around with. So, you know, the crowd that's doing things that they shouldn't be doing. Let's just leave it at that. And I think, fortunately for me, I had joined a track club in New Haven while I was in high school called the Runners of Bikila, named after the great Ethiopian, late Ethiopian, Abibi Bikila, who, barefoot runner in the 60s, won Olympic medals, I want to say 60 and 64, if my memory serves me correctly. But I joined this running club, and there were a lot of older men on the club, older than me, who was 16 at the time, guys who were in their 20s and 30s. And it was because of running and because of joining that club, that track club, that pulled me off the streets and away from the path that I was going on and the crowd that I was hanging around with. So I feel as though running saved my life. And that's why I don't want to say I owe my life to the sport, because that sounds really funny. But I think that's why I enjoy it. And that's why I'm so passionate about it. Because truth be told, Justin, if I did not join that running club and if I wasn't a runner, I don't know where I would be today and what I would be doing. I don't know if I would be sitting here and doing this podcast with you. So, and again, I said this, that we all have a different path to running and our journey throughout the sport is different. But running has been my life. It saved my life, and it's an important part of my life, and I can't imagine ever not doing it. So, I mean, that's kind of my story. And you talk to runners across the country and worldwide, and they all have a different story to tell. But that's kind of my story. And you know, I enjoy sharing it with other people, because we learn from each other, right? And you came to the sport for a different reason, and you're story is different and inspiring, and what you're doing now with the podcast and creating this forum for people to share their story, that's inspiring. Because if this forum isn't there, then people wouldn't hear from other runners and wouldn't hear other stories. So I commend you for doing this and giving me the opportunity and having this platform to kind of share my story and hear other stories as well.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Wayne. I didn't know that in depth. I know there's always, I mean, like you say, everyone's got a story. Uh-huh. I love hearing those ones, especially when the path is so unknown, but sometimes it's dark heading in one direction, and then we make one decision that impacts us tremendously. So, but it's cool to see that you've, you know, embraced it for what it was. You know, they opened their arms to you, and then you do the same right now for other people too. So, and continue to do so. I know, like I referred to in the intro, that weekend in Boston, like we didn't know you, but you know, you shared, you know, your city with us, and you know, it connected runners from all over the country that came from different walks of life. And that was like a overwhelming, not in a bad way, but to connect with that many individuals on one weekend at the Boston Marathon was tremendous, you know? So yeah, you're right. It's those experiences that brought me here. And I'm grateful to share stories like yours on this show.
Yeah. One of my mentors, just quickly, he ML Carr, I don't know if you're a basketball fan, but when I worked for the Celtics, ML was one of my mentors, and he said, if you take a step back and think about everything that you know how to do, everything from tying your shoes to the importance of a firm handshake, you name it, brushing your teeth, by and large, 99.9% of that is learned behavior. You learned it from someone else. Someone taught you how to do it. So my sense is, you know, it's not mine to keep. I have an obligation to also pass that on and share that with someone else, whether it's my kids or another runner or you or someone else. You know, we got to pay it forward, and we have to share it. It's not ours to keep. Someone gave it to us. It's a gift, and we have an obligation to share it and pass it on. So I enjoy doing that. And again, thank you for allowing me to share a little bit of myself and my story in this platform.
Of course. What would you say is your greatest accomplishment?
Non-running. I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. So that's pretty significant. I'm proud of that. Running, yeah. Probably, you know, I was state champ in high school. That's up there. Winning the New England's in college in 10,000 meters. And then I also won the BA Half Marathon, the inaugural one in 2001. So those are probably three of my most significant running accomplishments. And then non-running, graduating from college and, you know, meeting my wife and my three boys. Those are up there for sure.
And you said that one of them's a runner too.
Yeah, his name is Justin. is 17. He's a junior in high school, and he is also starting to have some success in running, but more importantly is enjoying it. So, you know, we try to, I don't force him to be a runner or to, you know, be competitive. I want him to do it on his own. I think he will last longer. He'll have longevity if it's from within, if it comes from within. But he is enjoying it. He runs every day, and just I provide the platforms to encourage him and to support him. So hopefully he will continue to enjoy it and have success.
Are you guys able to get out for runs?
On his easy days, if I'm doing a workout, he's fast, Justin. He as far as I do, but he is definitely faster than me. So we don't run together that often, primarily because he's just too fast for me. But on occasion, if I'm doing a workout or if I'm doing a tempo, he'll jump in and help out. And I got to say, I love that. I would have never guessed 17, 18 years ago that, you know, I would have a son or I would have three sons and I can run with one of them. And, I so enjoy that. And I feel so fortunate and so blessed. It's one of my proudest, most enjoyable, things that I do when we have the opportunity to run together.
That's awesome. And I know in your spare time, you run with other people and show them around like you did with us that weekend with Run Boston.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that and like your favorite spots? Sure. To run in
the city? Boston is, you know, it's a fascinating city, obviously so much history here. Being one of the oldest cities and the birthplace of the American Revolution. So I'm fortunate to have been introduced to this concept. It wasn't my idea. In my spare time, I do running tours for a company that I own called Run Boston. And essentially we do historical running tours. So people that are visiting the city and want to learn about the history, we customize running tours for them and basically show them the city and welcome them and give them a tour of Boston and Cambridge. And there's so much history here, so it's really easy to do that. But I love it. I love meeting people from all over the world and basically just sharing our beloved city with them. And people love the concept. They're like, wow, I never knew that it existed, because you go to a city and you go on a run and you pass things, but you don't know what you're seeing. So imagine if you had a tour guide with you that's basically sharing the information about the things that you're passing. We have fun with it. So Run Boston.
And what's your favorite route that you go on, or what would you suggest to people? I mean, I would suggest go on the tour because you're amazing.
Yeah.
If someone was going to run in Boston, what would you say is your favorite
spot? Two of the most more frequent roots. Believe it or not, we get a lot of requests for people who want to see parts of the Boston Marathon. Just because, you know, if you've never run Boston and you've never been to the city, you're kind of intrigued. If you are a runner, most runners want to see parts of the Boston Marathon course. And then for non-runners and runners, the Freedom Trail is a trail that has 16 historical sites, starting with the Boston Common, the Boston Public Gardens, and the State House. And so that's probably one of our more popular tours because of the historical context. So Boston Marathon
and Trail. Great. And I know we did a couple
bridges. Yeah, when you come to Boston for the marathon, I'll take you on a tour. The thing, what's kind of unique about Boston is everything is named after something, and they have multiple names. So it's just kind of cool hearing all the history and learning about what these names are and what their relevance are and significance.
Totally. I don't know how you have any time for anything else, Wayne. You're so hands-on. You got so much stuff going on, including advisory board for Back on My Feet. Can you tell us about that
too? Sure. Amazing company, not-for-profit. Started several years ago, and now they have chapters, multiple chapters across the U.S. But it's an organization, a not-for-profit, that uses the sport of running as a catalyst to create change with the homeless population. So essentially, we work with their different chapters. So using the Boston chapter as an example, we work with several homeless shelters, and we go in and get members from those shelters to commit to running with us. And we run in the morning very early, 5:30 in the morning, and we do it year round, as long as the weather permits. And we essentially use running as the hook. Once we have these members starting to run and starting to feel good about themselves, then we focus on life skills and life choices. And the ultimate goal is to get them employed and to get them to find housing. Really cool concept, and just love being involved with the work that they're doing, because they're transforming and changing and saving lives, but using running to do that. So because of my passion, that aligns nicely be able to support that organization.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. I thought it was, I read that, I was like, oh, that's the coolest thing, like in terms of ground up work with the homeless population. And so do you guys supply them with running shoes?
We do, yeah. So it's, you have benchmarks. So after you reach a certain number of miles, you get X, Y, and Z shoes, apparel. But again, you know, the focal point is running, but that's essentially the hook. The real focus, long-term focus, is to get them employed and to get them out of those shelter, to get them back on their feet, which is obviously the name. So really cool, real cool organization. Yeah, check it out. You could go to backofmyfeet.org and learn more about it. And their chapters across the country. I don't know. I can't recall if they have any outside of the U.S. But who knows? Maybe we can open one up.
Montreal. Do you feel like you say running is the hook, but do you feel like running gives them like the discipline? Like, I know for me, and I've mentioned it in other podcasts, but like, if I had the same discipline that I have with running that I have with other things, like, who knows what would be possible, you know? But I chose running, and I'm most dedicated to that, I feel. But yeah. Do you feel like that's like the basis? Like,
I understand what you're asking. I think, you know, if you watch and just observe, like when we first go to a shelter and someone is introduced to the concept, they're like, running? Me? Are you crazy? I can't do that. But, you know, running is it's essentially a fast walk, right? So if you can walk, you can run. But we encourage them just to try it, just to come out and run with us one morning. It's early in the morning. It's going to be cold. Just give it a try. And it's amazing to see what happens once they try it and they start coming consistently. And, you know, you can almost notice a total transformation in terms of how they are feeling about themselves and their approach. These are people who have made mistakes and some of it is out of their control, and they have an opportunity to do a reset and kind of start over and have a second chance. So, it's amazing. It really is. I love the work that they're doing, and fortunate to be able to play a small part in support the organization.
Mm-hmm. That's great, Wayne. Love that. What has running taught you?
It's taught me patience. I think to be successful as a runner, you have to be patient. You know that, particularly longer distances. You have to be patient. But it's taught me commitment. It's taught me discipline. It's taught me motivation. And I think these are the skills that you learn and are reinforced when you participate in sports, not just running, in a lot of, whether it be individual or team sports, and they transfer over into your life, right? So that's the best part about it, is things that you learn, if they can help you become a better person, then it's so worth it. So I think, just to name a few, those are some of the things. Patience, definitely. I've become a more patient person because of that. Discipline, motivation, having a game plan. You know, if you want to train for a marathon, you don't just go out and do it. You got to have a game plan, and you got to have a training plan, and you got to put it down on paper, and you have to commit to it. And then you got to follow it through, and you can take that same approach and apply it to a project, your relationship, your marriage, your work, a project, you know, anything, and it works. So I think those are some of the things that I have learned from running, and there are physical benefits too, but there are mental benefits. Just, you know, having an opportunity to have some alone time every day when I do run by myself, that's a gift. Just to kind of step away and reflect about your day and your life and your job and your family. I enjoy that and I cherish it. And I look forward to it every day. So those are, just to name a few, those are some of the things that I've learned from my time, limited time with running.
Mm. I cherish that time too, and running outside too, no matter how cold it is. Because with my job, I took a job up north, Wayne, like way, way up north, and I can only run on a treadmill when I'm there for 2 weeks. So when I come home, it's like, yeah, I'm getting outside. I'm getting fresh air.
I'm not staring person either.
I can't get used to it. No. What does running mean to you?
It means everything. I know it's going to happen at some point where I won't be able to run. I can't imagine my life without it. It means everything. And again, I'm sitting at my desk and knocking on wood because I've been so blessed to be able to do it. And, you know, I don't know how many years I've been running. I would have to do the math. I started in 1979. Probably well before a lot of the people that are listening to this podcast were born. And I haven't looked back, and I still enjoy it. It has taught me so much, and I am just blessed that I've been able to continue to do it. And the fact that I'm enjoying it is also, and I can continue to compete. I'm really, really, really fortunate. I count my things. I don't take that for granted at all.
For sure. And if anything, it's kept you in great shape and staying young, and, you know, so yeah. that's That's also
I have to keep up with the three boys. So you need to be in shape to do that for sure.
Yeah. For sure. Well, Wayne, I mean, I'm grateful for running too. It's, you know, it connected us back in 2017, and it's been way too long since we had our last conversation, but I'm grateful that you were able to make time for us today and come on the show and share your journey with us.
Enjoy the conversation. It's always good kind of going back and reminiscing and, you know, reflecting. So thank you for the opportunity.
Pleasure, Wayne. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
Are you already subscribed to La Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.